Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this evening is my good friend and co-host.
Dad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. We are so glad to be joined for our annual interview with our good friend and friend of the podcast, Jim Vavida from IGN.com. How are you, Jim?
How you guys doing? How are you?
Doing well. Renowned playwright, Jim Vavida. How's that all going?
It's been going well. I've had some luck with this short play of mine. It's like a 10, a 12 minute play, because a lot of festivals will accept short plays and package theater companies accept the short plays to kind of package them into a larger themed festival. So it's kind of handy to have a couple of shorts that you can submit to things. But yeah, thank you. It's been going well.
That's good to hear. So we are in the midst of Oscar season. We have you on about this time every year so you can kind of give us a feel for the landscape of LA and how everything looks to be going. Have you noticed any differences this year with, how the strikes affected last year's productivity and morale and all those things leading into this particular award season?
It's definitely, it felt like a very kind of compressed, rushed award season, and it has been because they basically everybody was one going back to work and two having to do, awards press. So everybody's schedules are pretty full. But I think more so, I think the fact that something like Dune Part Two had to, get pushed because like they couldn't open in November and not have any talent out there to support it. I think if that movie the if that movie had come out in November as it normally would have, I think the Oscar race would be a little different right now. I saw the movie a couple of weeks ago and I liked it even more than the first one. And I think hopefully maybe it'll be remembered come award season in the major character categories and not just in the technical stuff. Because I think what Denis Villeneuve did with this one is kind of up there with like Peter Jackson and Return of the King. And if he can win an Oscar for that, I think you can make a very good case for why Denis could, potentially win. But we'll see. We'll see what the rest of the year holds. And I think they'd almost have to re-release Dune Part Two later in the year just to get it back in consideration. But
I believe you had the tweet of the year in regards to Dune Part Two when you, I think, believe it was you who called it the Godfather Part Two of sci-fi.
yeah, and that was deliberate because I again like I do think it could have a real chance at an Oscar, but we'll see. I mean, it's a very it's incredibly well done. It really hits the ground running, and is just it's a better movie and story than the first one, which had all the weight of having to set everything up and then it just kind of ends. This one really like you're on a ride for the whole thing, and there is a real possibility of Dune Messiah happening the way this film kind of plants the seeds for that. So hopefully we'll get that in a few years,
Indeed. So, speaking of this year's Oscar race, is it would it be fair to categorize or characterize this year's Oscar race heading into the Dolby Cinema in a few years, in a few months, a few weeks? Is it Oppenheimer's statue to lose?
Yes. Yeah, there's I no doubt in my mind that I think everyone knows like that's their party. I think that it's all the particular categories that it's been leading in from best picture, director, actor, and supporting actor. I think it'll get all of those. Again, like if there had been a little bit more competition. I think like there's a great lineup of films, but like nobody's talking about Maestro. I think Past Lives was a wonderful movie. but I think the Spirit Awards is about as far as it's gonna go for that. And then I do think the only category that say like Killers of the Flower Moon, which months ago I thought, okay, now we get a race, and then Oppenheimer just took off and running. I think the only category Killers is gonna win, and it's a coin flip, is Best Actress for Lily Gladstone. I think her SAG win over the weekend, it's like Brendan Fraser last year, like, oh, maybe Austin Butler's gonna get it. And then Brendan Fraser, just once he got the SAG thing, it was like, yeah, he's the guy. So I think Lily, although it's gonna be a tight race, because Emma Stone's work in Poor Things was remarkable as well, and she's hugely popular, but she does already have an Oscar. And I think they would like to reward Killers in some regard, and I think Lily is the best representative of that film. So yeah, I don't think Scorsese's not gonna win. It's Nolan's night, you know, and I think everyone knows that. So
And do you think that Giamatti could pull an upset in Best Actor, or do you think that's kind of on
he's the
lockdown
only
too?
one who could, I think. He's the only one who could. He is also very well liked, but I think Cillian Murphy is, because he's so understated in that film, and the whole thing, I mean, the whole movie relies on him, you know. I think that would be a historic upset if he lost and Giamatti won. But Giamatti is also incredibly well liked, and but I will say, never discount the Irish charm. It wins people over. So I think Killian pretty much has it in the bag, but the only one who could take it from him is Giamatti. But I don't think he will.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Giamatti didn't even get nominated for Sideways, did he?
I don't know if he did. I forget. That was a while ago. But
Yes.
he's, I don't, yeah, he's not, it's not like he's up for an award every year either. You know, he's,
Right.
I think he's done well at the Emmys, but like, I don't think, yeah, I don't think, he got the Golden Globe, right, for comedy, I think, for that.
Right.
But
I
I don't know.
because I remember Thomas Hayden Church from Wings getting nominated for that Oscar, but I didn't think Giamatti did.
He
But
did, yeah.
I remember it being one of those big like day after the nomination headlines that like this guy kind of got screwed.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right.
Yeah, he's only been nominated twice. The other time was for Cinderella Man.
Oh shoot, that's right. Yeah, he was nominated for Best Supporting for that one. Oh yeah,
Chad,
totally.
I yield my time to you.
Well, thank you, Brian. So I'm at a disadvantage because I don't get to see as much of these movies as Brian does. So the only category I know anything about is animated, which is just fine by me. But have you seen all the
Not all
animated
of
features?
them, no, not all of them. But I do think I know, like, Across the Spider-Verse is like the leading contender, but I wouldn't count out The Boy and the Heron. Like, there's a lot of love for that film, but I just don't know how many of the voters actually saw it. But I think Across the Spider-Verse is just a beautiful movie. It's, you know, obviously the first one won as well. So I think it's Spider-Verse to lose, but I think the only one that could beat it is Boy and the Heron.
Yeah, that my thought going into it was I thought it would be Spider-Verse to lose. And based on nothing, once I realized Boy and the Heron was up for it as well, and it's Miyazaki, I was like, you know, they just gave Spider-Verse one. It's Miyazaki and he's older, so
I think that's not bad reasoning. I mean, I could totally see it happening that way. And you also, you know, it's you know, I there's the sense around superhero movies right now and everything that I don't know if there's going to be as much love towards awards love towards them even though Spider-Verse clearly deserves it. It's a beautiful film, like literally beautiful to look at every frame. But I don't know if it'll get punished for being a superhero movie or not. You know, probably not. I'm probably just being cynical.
Oh, well, we'll see come Sunday. But my last one for you is, so outside of like the big awards, what are you most looking forward to come the Oscar show?
Oh, Ryan Gosling performing I'm Just Ken. They just announced that today.
I did see that. Yeah.
That's up there. That's up there. And if Lily Gladstone wins, as I suspect she will, her speech. She has great speeches. So I think those are the two. But I think everybody's waiting for Ryan Gosling to sing.
Yeah, I do think that's going to be fun.
Yeah, it'll be similar to the Blame Canada performance and the Lego song performance. Everything is awesome.
Yeah.
Forgot about that one.
I will say, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know that we have talked a lot on this podcast in your various interviews about Killers and how much that book meant and the impact it had on you. What were your thoughts on the final film and Scorsese kind of saying at the end, you know, the audience has just as much blame as anybody else in this?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was remarkable piece of art. I thought it was, to me, the movie that it's most comparable to is Schindler's List. I had the same feeling at the end of that movie as I did at Schindler's, which is it is complete like gut punch to the soul. It's not clearly an easy movie to watch. I think it's, you know, more compelling than entertaining, if you will. Like, it's not that kind of movie. So I don't know, like, if it's one of those movies I could revisit often, because it's about genocide, just like Schindler's, you know. So it had a similar vibe to it. I thought the music, the score was great. I loved Robbie Robertson, RIP, and then the visuals, and that ending is saying clever, it seems like it's cheapening it, but it's I thought it was a really thought-provoking way to kind of wrap that story up. And yeah, I mean, Scorsese has been out there, you know, championing this film of his achievement here. And I think if it were any other year, it'd be his, but I just think it's Nolan's party and we're all just tagging along. I will say I was shocked that Leo didn't get nominated. I thought he was remarkable, but a lot of great performances this year.
And yeah, I was too, but I also thought that De Niro was giving his best there.
Oh yeah,
that kind of overshadowed Leo, if that makes any sense.
That is true. Yeah, I think people are so used to De Niro doing like paycheck roles now, that to see him be like his old self again. I mean, I loved it. I thought he was remarkable. It just reminded you, like, the right guy, the right director, the right director, the right character, for him, he still got it. You know, it's just like, he seems like he's kind of just been doing paycheck movies for a long time now. You know, if that's one of his final films, I mean, that's a hell of a one to go out on. You know, that's definitely part of his legacy, this film.
I love the idea of this last set of Scorsese movies from Wolf of Wall Street on basically being a deep meditation on sin and grief and loss, and the idea of America as a whole not being the shining city on the hill, but reconciling our sins and realizing that we played a part and what that means to our legacy as a country moving forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's there's definitely, I'm not even, I'm, well, he must be aware of it. He certainly was for Killers, but like, Yeah, his commentary over, you're right, over his last few films are really about our country, like The Irishman even, right? Like and sort of peeling back the layers on things. I think I'd be curious to just hear him speak at length about all of that and about like what his thoughts are on where we are now and everything. But yeah, no, that's very astute. I agree with everything you said.
Because to me, The Irishman is about the wages of sin being death. And then, Killers of the Flower Moon is about all of us having a hand in the sin that leads to death.
Yeah.
And atonement, and the atonement part of that being in silence. And Wolf of Wall Street being about the sin of greed. So it would be interesting to hear him talk about that at length because, one of my favorite podcast listens is Empire did a interview with Tarantino and the guy who did the Concerto trilogy. Edward, help me out here, Chad.
What was that?
The guy who did the Concerto trilogy. Edgar Wright.
Yes.
Yeah, Edgar and Quentin Tarantino for 2 hours talking about British film. I wish I could get something like that with Scorsese talking about his entire filmography.
Yeah, no, that would be great. I mean, he's a I love all those like filmmaker discussion ones. Like Nolan and Guillermo del Toro are great at like basically moderating those. Yeah, I think didn't Nolan do one with Scorsese recently?
Yeah, well, I know that the DGA podcast has got theirs up with him for Oppenheimer. I don't know who moderated it, but
Right.
the DGA podcast where they do a screening in LA and then have the Q&A afterwards are always very good listens for me.
Oh yeah, no, fantastic. I've been to a couple of those, and they are. I mean, it's a very hot ticket to get into that thing because you're just a fly on the wall watching these two, watching two filmmakers at the top of their game just talking shop, and it's really fun. To backtrack for a minute to Oppenheimer, I think the only category that people seem to think it's a lock, but I think it could lose adapted screenplay to American Fiction. I know it's a long shot, but I really loved American Fiction and I thought its script was great. And I think Nolan, he'll get at least two Oscars between picture and director. I have a feeling voters will share the love and give it to adapted screenplay to something else. I know it's a long shot. It's leading in that category, but I think if American Fiction were to take anything, it'll be screenplay, adapted screenplay.
Yeah, one less shot for me to take on Oscar night. Planning on taking shots for every Oppenheimer win. So Monday morning should be fun for me.
The only thing that Barbie's gonna get is best song and costume for the
Yeah.
Billie Eilish song, but I don't think it's not going to get shut out. It's not going to be like Elvis that where, oh, it'll, people thought it was going to get costume or production design. I went home empty-handed. I don't think it's going to get shut out. I think Maestro is going to get shut out. And
I think Past Lives is also going to get shut out, but I was glad to see the Spirit Awards pick that up.
yeah, I mean, I'd love to see that get something, but yeah, like I said earlier, I don't think I think it's kind of outgunned this year. And then, I think the only thing the holdovers will get, if it's not a Giamatti upset, will be screenplay. I think it's the holdovers to lose. Actually, no, holdovers will also get supporting actress for D Divine Joy Randolph. So
Yeah,
yeah,
that's about as lock as you get right now.
oh yeah, yep. No, I forgot there for a second. Yeah, it's a yeah. No, that one's a lock. She. Yeah. She's going home with the gold that night.
Well, so Jim, we appreciate your time as always and your support of the podcast. We got one more to get you out on.
Okay.
What was the best film you saw this year?
That's a tough one because I didn't see as many as I wanted to this year. I had a lot of other stuff going on, and I'm kind of more in like the events partnership side of things now. I don't really review much anymore, but I loved Killers of the Flower Moon. I, you know, Oppenheimer is up there for me, Barbie. But I'd have to say, I think American Fiction was really up there. So it's probably Killers and American Fiction. And then, and Past Lives. And I liked the Priscilla movie too. That wasn't too bad. I don't think it's got moments where it's great, but I think it's really good. It was definitely Sofia Coppola was like the perfect director for that movie. And Across the Spider-Verse, that's way up there too. So yeah, I think pretty much the ones I talked about most on this podcast, or you know, but if I had to pick just one, probably killers, you know.
Yeah, it would be a close race for me between Past Lives and Killers of the Flower Moon. Although I have seen Oppenheimer like 3 times, Past Lives just, it made me fall back in love with the kind of indie movie that I grew up with the Before trilogy, which is near and dear to my heart.
Right.
And the idea that a filmmaker could put something like this together and get it made nowadays is mind blowing to me. And I think one of the reasons
it's just not getting the film too, you know, it's, you know, it must've been incredibly challenging to, you know, and you know, no major stars in it either, and yet they got it made, you know, so that's great.
Yeah, and I think one of the things hindering it is the love for the last two or three, the last few Oscar cycles, where Parasite and Everything Everywhere ran away with things that maybe the Academy was looking to go in a different direction. Yeah. But I think Carolyn Song is going in a bigger direction for her next film, so hopefully she'll get some love with that. And also, you're right, I was also happy that Sofia Coppola made a movie and that it was better than The Bling Ring.
I will say, I think Oppenheimer is, it's exactly the movie that the industry kind of needed in a way, like a 3-hour drama, thriller, you know, biopic that made almost $1 billion. I mean, if it wasn't as successful commercially, I don't know if it would be a front runner, but like, it's a, you know, just such a loud, resounding message to the industry, the success of that and Barbie. But Barbie is IP, let's face it. That's why the whole original screenplay thing to me is ridiculous. It's like, everyone knows who Barbie and Ken is because it's pre-existing. So the relationships in that movie only work because it is adapted from something that everyone knows, you know? So I think it's, you know, it's kind of a flaky argument to say it's original, but I think Oppenheimer, the fact that it was so, it's a movie that shouldn't have been as successful as it was, you know? So I think it's definitely, it's going to win Best Picture because of that. It's just, you know, it's the industry saying, we can do it, you know?
We can do it and we can be financially successful at doing it. And if we just listen to our great filmmakers, we'll be fine.
Yep. So fingers crossed for everyone, but particularly Lily Gladstone. I really hope she wins. Emma Stone is absolutely great in it. She has a real shot at winning, but I want to see Lily get it.
Yeah, because I've heard the narrative of her that she just played sick. And I'm like, no, you didn't see the film, or you didn't even read the film the way it was supposed to be presented to you, if all you got across was she was playing sick.
Which is also like pretty crappy way to just denigrate a performance. How about the 3/4 of the film where she's saying a lot with her face without saying anything because, you know, she's so understated in the movie? I think, yeah, it's, oh, she's just playing sick is like, so okay, so was Daniel Day-Lewis just playing a condition when he won for My Left Foot? No, you know, like, I don't know. I think that's I really hate that argument that people have made, you know.
Well, Jim, we appreciate you coming on the podcast and your support of the podcast over the years, and we look forward to you having you join us again soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. We'll chat next time.
Thanks,
Indeed.
Jim.
Thank you, Jim. Bye. So, some interesting stuff from there from Jim Vavida of IGN.com. Any thoughts, comments, or concerns as my cat digs his claws into my back?
I was very dang, what's the word? I was very encouraged by his thoughts about American Fiction. I still didn't get around to seeing that because it was a pain in the tuchus to find it, and I live in a major city, and I could not find it until I couldn't make arrangements to go see it. But I've heard good things about that movie, and I haven't heard much about it for Oscar season, not like I expected to, but to hear Jim talk about it and like his favorite movies and hoping that it wins for adapted screenplay, I'm very good to hear. I'm laughing because Brian disappeared and he's on a beach with a Hawaiian shirt. So, yeah, wish y'all could see it.
A Minion's Hawaiian shirt at that. I love getting to sit and talk film with Jim. That is one of the fun parts of this podcast that we get to do. And Jim's been a good friend to me and to the podcast, and it's been a lot of fun having him on. But like it's a really interesting Oscar season and Oscar race. And I didn't get a chance to talk to him about the Oscars going first, but I feel like this sense of impending doom, but like the sense of foreboding is interesting because like last year we got that run of All Quiet on the Western Front. And it doesn't quite feel like there's a movie in this conversation right now that could go on a run for an hour and like make us question what's going to happen. I think that this is, they may top out with 6 or 7, they may not win 12 or 14, but still it will be the Academy Awards, you know, recognizing Oppenheimer as the best picture of the year.
Wait, the show is this weekend, right?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's like March 8th, I want to say.
You do realize March 8th should be like this weekend. Well, no, it's March 10th. It's March 10th, so it's 2 weeks. 2 weeks, okay.
Yeah. I was about to say, I'm moving, Chad. Doesn't mean my entire sense of like time and space have collapsed.
Okay, well, okay, we'll put a button in that and come back to that later.
All right. So Chad is going to do his yearly version of Jimmy Ott and Charles Hanegraaff, and he's going to break out his blue book, and he is going to keep track of my Oscar predictions for this, the year of our Lord, 2024. So Chad, go ahead and pull up your Oscar site there and get your ballot up, and let's go forth and predict the Oscars for these good folks. As I predicted accurately, 20 of the 26 categories last year.
Yes, you did.
So this is where Chad plays his usual great role of Blue Book, Charlie, and Jimmy, and holds me to account for my Oscar predictions. I went 20 of 26 last year, went on a really good run, damn All Quiet on the Western Front. And now, this year, we have a new crop of films, a new crop of nominees. So I get to do this all over again, and Chad gets to hold me to account. So Chad, let's start at the bottom and work our way up.
All right. So we're going to start with original screenplay. All right. So your nominees are Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, and Past Lives.
I'm going to go with The Holdovers, although I'm going to be rooting for Past Lives in any category that Past Lives is in. I'm going to go with The Holdovers for original screenplay.
All right, next category, we have adapted screenplay. Yeah. All right, so the nominees for adapted screenplay are American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest.
I will go with Jim on this one, American Fiction. As much as I would love to see Barbie get its a proper run, I think that we're gonna get some love for something else, and I think it'll be American Fiction.
Excellent. I love hearing that. All right, our next category is visual effects. The nominees are The Creator, Godzilla Minus One, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
You can just stop at Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. It is no longer Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part One. Paramount only Paramount only now recognizes it as Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning.
But that's what they got here. But I get you. I understand. Paramount has seen the error of their ways.
Yeah, they saw the error of their ways when they put it on Paramount Plus. They didn't see the error of their ways at any other point in the marketing cycle.
It's true. It's true. All right. And finally, Napoleon.
History, Chad, will be made here. The first Godzilla Toho produced movie to ever be nominated for an Oscar is also going to become the first Academy Award winning Godzilla movie. Godzilla Minus One.
Excellent. All right. Our next category is sound. The nominees are The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest. And before you go, I just found out what The Zone of Interest is about and how it's described. I cannot see how this does not win something for sound.
So I'm really of the opinion that this is Oppenheimer's movie category to lose, mainly because that very much in the same vein with Zone of Interest, Oppenheimer benefits from sound design from the very get-go, from the opening scenes all the way to the end with the bomb and then the Senate scenes. It's just like the bomb scene alone, the wave of sound that crashes over you after the silence that has been evoked, that alone gives you the opportunity, it makes the case for sound design. Maestro and the Creator and Mission Impossible basically use sound in stereotypical ways. The Creator is in that, Blade Runner 2049 vein in terms of sci-fi sound. Mission Impossible is just your standard blockbuster use of sound. Maestro is an interesting case simply because it is a movie about scores and about inherently about music. And so therefore it's going to have a unique sound design challenge to it. But I really do think that this is going to be Oppenheimer's Oscar to win. Zone of Interest might actually be the second, my second place movie on this one. Going back to original screenplay, I May December and Past Lives were also very awesome. And if you've listened to this podcast or even just listened to my last interview with Jim, I really love Past Lives. It was my favorite film of the year. And very much has an kinship to me of the Before trilogy. So I'm really rooting for it. And I feel like May December got trash for no real reason. But I think it's going to be the holdovers to win original. And as much as I would love Greta to win an Academy Award for something, I do think it'll be American Fiction or Oppenheimer for best adaptive screenplay. Visual effects, again, I just can't see the Creator or Guardians or Mission Impossible benefiting from visual effects, and no one, and I mean no one, actually liked Napoleon, so I can't see them going that way. So, sorry, Sir Ripley, try again when you're 95. And then, like I said, Oppenheimer and Zone of Interest would be the I just can't see the bomb dropping scene alone justifies the bomb scene alone justifies the sound design.
Well, hopefully I'll see Oppenheimer before the show. Actually, now that it's like 2 weeks away, I'm pretty sure I will. But
You and I both are Peacock subscribers for wrestling, so we both have access to it.
yeah, I knew when it showed up, what, like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, February 16th. Yeah.
I haven't had the Not even time. It's just the wherewithal to situate myself for 3 hours to watch these dudes talk about dropping a bomb. Moving on to our next category, it is live action short film. The nominees are The After, Invincible, King of Fortune, Red, White, and Blue, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar.
I think that this is not even close, and that we get the one of the many Richard Dole short films nominated in one for best live action short. I think Netflix made an investment in Wes Anderson, and I think that investment's going to pay off in this category.
That's the only one I know. So, that's kind of where I lean,
How
but
many of those did you get a chance to see? Because they're all on Netflix and they didn't do any marketing for them to let you know that they existed.
see, and that's the thing. I don't ever like I have Netflix, but I don't ever go on Netflix. So unless you tell me something's there, I don't go look for it on Netflix. So I haven't seen any of these. Well, I knew about Henry Sugar. I just haven't got around to watching it. But the rest of them, I didn't know.
Yeah, and that's where the beauty of these animated and live action shorts being played in theaters by Cinemark and AMC help. I'm just sad that we're leaving the days behind of marathons for Best Picture nominees and having to do that on your own through multiple streaming services.
I thought AFC was doing that.
I haven't seen it promoted around here. I'm lucky to get access to past lives around here.
That's interesting. I don't know if I saw it necessarily promoted through them per se, but I want to say that I did see like a screen that said AMC and like Oscar stuff, but maybe it's not marathon. Maybe they're just playing all the movies
Or the
that are nominated.
shorts.
Yeah. Next category is animated short film. The nominees are Letter to a Pig, 95 Senses, Our Uniform, Pachyderm, and War Is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. I got a guess on that one.
I would very much love to see War Is Over get nominated and win. However, I think that this will be 95 Senses film to lose, category to lose. Just an outright beautiful film. And I just, as much as I love the music of John and Yoko and loved the use of that, I just think that they're not going to go there. The thing is, like, I'm also intrigued that of all the people in all the world, you could grant the life story rights of the Beatles members to, you would choose Sam Mendes.
Well, yeah, I did see that. That's an ambitious idea, to say
But
the
like, even if
least.
it's an ambitious idea, Chad, shouldn't you get a different director for each Beatle? Because they have individual life stories, individual styles. Wouldn't you want an individual four individual directors tackling the individual members?
Initially when I heard it, I thought that's what it was. Before I realized that Sam Mendes had the rights for all of them. And why would he give them to somebody else? I mean, I would be a producer and do what I would pick the one I want to do, farm it out to the other people, and then bam. But, what do I know?
All right, let's move on to production design.
All right, production design. Your nominees are Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
I'm going to go with Barbie on production design. Again, as Jim said, with them looking to nominate it and looking to get it some love, I think production design would easily be a way to do that because, as you stated on our review podcast for the film back in July, you really only spend about 20 minutes of the film's runtime in the real world. The rest is spent in Barbie Land. And Barbie Land took a whole hell of a lot to design and make livable and realistic. So I would definitely go with Barbie on this one, although I would not be upset to see Killers of the Flower Moon recognized for the way that it's, representing Native American culture in the time and the energy that was put into those costumes and just the aesthetic of making recreating Osage County on the big screen.
For what it's worth, this pick'em that I'm keeping track of everything on, has Oppenheimer picked as the favorite for this one.
That would make sense. Again, when we did this, we did this the last time, we saw some outrageously large Oppenheimer numbers. So,
They're still there, pretty much. All
yeah.
right. So next up, we have original song. The nominees are The Finalist.
I love that Chad knows us so well to skip over
Oh,
Best Picture to the end.
yeah, it's a big one. I don't even have to think about that. So it's the fire
I'm pretty sure
inside
this.
from Flamin' Hot. I'm Just Ken from Barbie. It Never Went Away from American Symphony. Waha, Wahazazi. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. A Song for My People from Killers of the Flower Moon. And What Was I Made For from Barbie. Also from Barbie. Barbie has two in this category.
Can you do the massive performance for I'm Just Ken that brings everybody to their feet and not reward it?
You very well could. I
I
really
mean,
think.
they didn't do that to Common. They didn't do it to Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga.
The Barbie song already didn't win awards because it won a Grammy. The Billie Eilish song. And I'm Just Ken is like, it's the crowd pleaser. If there is a crowd pleaser award, I would think it's this one. So, I mean, I would think I would give it to it, but you know, it's just me.
I mean, I think that it's possible that the two Barbie movies split the vote and then you get one of the others to slide in, but I just don't see
I don't
how you're
think.
going to. Is didn't Billie Eilish already have an Oscar from one of the Bond songs that she did?
Maybe. Did she do? She probably did. I don't know. That sounds right, though. That sounds right.
Yeah,
I
because
just.
I feel like every time a Bond song is nominated, it whether it's Adele or whether it's Sam Mendes or whether it's or not Sam Mendes, Sam, yeah, Writing's on the Wall, dude.
Sam. Is it Sam Smith? Whatever.
I think Sam Smith. Yeah, I try to forget that movie and the song because Spectre was not great, but No Time to Die, exceeded expectations by a million, but still no one remembers it, so.
On a side note, I've only seen like two Bond movies in the theater. I think Spectre was the second one, and I think I saw it with you.
I have a tendency to drag you when we lived in the same city. I had a tendency to drag you to things that you otherwise would not have partaken in.
Yeah, I miss a lot of things about you and that city. That is not one of them.
Well, I am glad that we got an opportunity to sit in a car and talk about Joker immediately after seeing it.
That was the first thing I thought of, man. All
That
right.
and me pulling up to the theater for Ghostbusters Answer the Call and a with
Oh,
my
hell
suit
yeah.
on with in my full suit on blaring I Ain't Afraid of No Ghosts out of my car windows.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Fun times. Fun times. All right. Let's go to the next category, original score. The nominees are American Fiction, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
It will be Ludwig van Göransson. Is that how he pronounces his name?
I know his name and I cannot think of it because I'm not looking at it. It's,
He's
yeah.
going to win, and it's going to be Oppenheimer. But the thing that I am looking forward to for this category is me and you were both astounded when Hateful Eight came out that there was a dude older than John Williams who was nominated for best original score, and they had to hobble him up there. And God bless him. He's gonna, Indiana Jones: The Dial of Destiny will be one of the last films that John Williams ever does, and it's a remarkable filmography that covers decades of some of the most famous movies ever made. And matter of fact, if you're interested, and if you're a film nerd, I believe it was The Hollywood Reporter who just put out a oral history on Schindler's List, and
I think so,
just
yeah.
some of the stories that came out of that. You know, my favorite was actually John Williams turning after seeing the movie, walked out and got some fresh air for a little while, and came back in and told Steven Spielberg, "Look, Steven, this takes a better composer than me." And Spielberg looked him in the eyes and said, "Yeah, I would go get them, but they're all dead."
Oh, that's a good anecdote.
So.
As a just for information, again on this Pick'em site, actually it is actually Indiana Jones that has the most votes.
Well, I think that that tails from the idea that if this is going to be John Williams's last film, or one of his last films, that you would want to reward the legacy by giving him one. And you know, Ludwig is, you know, pumping him out like every 3 years now. So like the chances are he's going to have more opportunities to get awarded.
I mean, I think his last nomination is the one that he won, and that was 6 years ago. Well, five, he would have won it 5 years ago. The movie was released 6 years ago.
I don't know. It's just going to be interesting to me. He also was behind the Fury Road score, which is still one of my favorites because it's just deep heavy metal for like 4.5, you know, for like 2.5 hours.
All right. So, next category. Makeup and hairstyling. Golda, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Society of the Snow.
This is one where I'm ultimately torn. Because I don't feel like the makeup and hairstyling amplify the story of Oppenheimer all that much. Like there is aging that goes on across the spectrum, but I don't feel like it's like typically in the last 5 to 10 years when I thought of like a winner for makeup and hairstyling, I've thought of like some big visual makeup that has like caught your attention that like The Whale, or you know, The Darkest Hour, something where you took this actor and you like physically transformed them into a way that was unrecognizable. And Oppenheimer is not that. Poor Things is very much out there look that is very different and unique and visually very sci-fi. And Maestro is just the latest Netflix film that they're pumping a bunch of money into an award season campaign for, and it's going nowhere. So I will say, Poor Things with Oppenheimer would be my second choice.
So next category, best international film. Il Capitano, Perfect Days, Society of the Snow, The Teacher's Lounge, The Zone of Interest. Now,
Zone
before
of
you go,
Interest.
yeah, I was going to say, before you go, I know one of these is nominated for Best Picture, too. And we make that mistake every, well, it has not proven to be a mistake the last few times we've done it.
I mean, again, if you're good enough to be nominated as one of the best pitchers of the year, you should be the best in your own category
Right.
by definition.
But some people don't think that. But and actually it's not winning on this pick'em. The pick'em has Society of the Snow.
It'll be interesting. It will be interesting. Because again, we have to also take into account that the branches nominate the individual branches. So the International Film Society, like the International Film Society and the international directors and that sort of thing vote on international feature. We brought up Edgar Wright earlier. Edgar from time to time will sit on that board. Iñárritu will sit on that board from time to time. So the individual branches nominate and then the collective academy votes, except on Best Picture, where everybody collectively votes to nominate. To me, if there's broad enough support within the Academy body politic as a whole to get you nominated for Best Picture, and there is enough goodwill for you to get nominated by your own branch as one of the five best international feature films, I just can't see where the disconnect there is.
All right. So next category is film editing. And the nominees are Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
Hardest one for me to call because editing plays a tremendous part in every one of these films work. And that is the key. Like you cannot take the editor and the editing away from any of these films and have them work as well as they do. Oppenheimer in particular, with it jumping back and forth. Killers of the Flower Moon having the various performances that it had to draw out. And we both know that, you know, Scorsese's worked with one cinematographer and one editor for the majority of his career. So I would not be surprised if she got her flowers for this one, no pun intended. Holdovers goes with an old school 1970s aesthetic for the entire film, down to like the way it shot, looking like it was shot in old school 70mm. I can't see this not coming down to Oppenheimer. As much as I love the way Killers of the Flower Moon and Holdovers particularly use editing to tell their stories, I think it's going to be Oppenheimer.
All right. Next category, documentary short film. The nominees are The ABCs of Book Banning, The Barber of Little Rock, Island in Between, The Last Repair Shop, and 90/90 and Waipo. Hopefully I said that close to correct.
I will go with the ABCs. No, actually, I'll go with The Barber of Little Rock.
All right. Next category is documentary feature film. Categories are Bobby Wine, The People's President, The Eternal Memory, Four Daughters, To Kill a Tiger, and 20 Days in Mirepoix.
Four Daughters.
Okay, we're going to skip that one. Next category is costume design. Your nominees are Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
It's very hot, like Barbie, and the various designs of different Barbie outfits make it stand out. Killers of the Flower Moon, again, getting period accurate Osage costumes that look and feel genuine is a very big part of how that film works. Napoleon is a period piece. Period pieces are always successful in this particular category. Oppenheimer, I'd honestly argue that the costume design is more imperative to the storytelling and the aesthetic than the makeup and hairstyling of it is. And then, of course, you got Poor Things, which, you know, the design on Emma Stone's character really just wows everybody and is central to that film working. I'm going to go with Oppenheimer to win over Barbie. Although, again, I wouldn't be surprised if Barbie won.
Yes, Barbie is the favorite in that category, according to the Pick'em site. All right. Next category is cinematography. The nominees are El Conte, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
Killers of the Flower Moon in an upset over.
Oh, so this is your killer's choice.
One of two.
But from everything I've heard, this sounds like this would probably be a really big shock if it happened.
Cinematography, it's just a tricky thing. It's like editing and costume design. Like, it's like, to me, the test is always, if you take this element out of the film or you put someone else in the position of the editor or the film or the cinematographer or the makeup artist, does it affect the quality of the film? And if my answer is yes, then you have to really consider that heavily when you're making your decisions in these roles. I just think that, I mean, Oppenheimer's going to win 6-7. I mean, I just don't know if this is going to be one of them.
All right. And now we get into what I consider the bigger awards. I know some people would probably kick this last one out, but since this is the one I see the most of, I call it one of the bigger ones. And that is animated feature film. The nominees are The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Gonna go with The Boy and the Heron and a surprise upset over Across the Spider-Verse.
Yes, Spider-Verse is a heavy favorite. You and I have talked about it throughout the year, before The Boy and the Heron came out, that Spider-Verse is probably a lock. And then The Boy and the Heron came out.
But both of us thought TMNT would get nominated and didn't.
Right. And I still think they should. Especially by the time the show rolls around, I will see most of these, because I know Nimona is on Netflix. And I was trying to watch Elemental last night. I didn't get too far into it. I don't know about, I might not see Robot Dreams, but yeah, I thought TMNT should have at least gotten a nomination. But, you know, I think
Disney rules the world when it comes to animation. There was no way you were leaving Elemental.
From what I've heard, I don't disagree with that. But I don't know which one of the other ones you take off because I haven't seen them. Maybe Robot Dreams, because it's the only one I haven't heard anything about. You know, the Miyazaki of it all, I think, is going to triumph over Spider-Man, particularly because they've already given Spider-Man one. All right. So our next category is Actress in a Supporting Role. The nominees are Emily Blunt in Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple, America Ferrera, Barbie, Jodie Foster, Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph, The Holdovers.
Lock of the week of the century would be Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers.
Right.
And Chad, if you have not had an opportunity to get on Peacock, I would actually recommend getting to Holdovers before you get to Oppenheimer. One, because it's a shorter film, but two, because it's just it's a interesting film that you could lump into that Emperor's Club, Dead Poets type of mold, and it's different, but it has three powerhouse performances. And if you take any of the three away, the movie isn't nearly as good. But she has won Best Supporting Actress at every single Critics Guild and every single award show since January. It's her.
Good. That's what I've heard, and I know it's on Peacock, so I'll get to that one this week too. And again, the Pick'em site actually has Emily Blunt as the favorite, and I think that's just your Oppenheimer bias showing from the voting public. All right, our next category is
actress. Remember, me and you went back and forth on this last year with, what was it, it wasn't Angelica Houston. Who was it?
What is it, Angela Bassett?
Angela Bassett. Angela Bassett and Jamie Lee Curtis, and us going back and forth, me being like, this is gonna happen. And you're like, no, it's not. It's gonna happen. No, it's not. And then it happened, and you're like, well, shit, that actually happened. I'm like, yeah. Like, we had this whole like award season for like 3 months where she kept outdoing, you know, Angela Bassett. So like, I knew this was coming.
Yes, you were right, and that is what made me not like the award seasons as much, because I know there's a lot of campaigning, and there's nothing against Jamie Lee Curtis, but...
Well, like you said last year, if you're going to nominate anybody, if you're going to give a reward to anybody but for that movie, it was not going to be Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, it was, I think it's Stephanie Hugh?
Yep.
And she was nominated. Like, my biggest part about thinking Angela Bassett win was that they were both nominated. So they should have, in any other world, they split the votes. So I thought Angela Bassett should have been the favorite going in. They split the votes. That even solidifies it even more. But yeah, if you're going just by performances, I personally think Angela Bassett should have won. But I don't think Jamie Lee Curtis should have been nominated. And good that she was, but she definitely should have won from that movie, Stephanie Stephanie should have won, but you know, I'm not going to beat that horse again. I'm just going to move on to actress in a leading role. And our nominees for that category are Annette Bening, Naiad, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, and Emma Stone, Poor Things.
A two-woman race that is going to be very close, but I'm going to go with Lily Gladstone.
Yeah, that's
who's going to make her high school, who's going to make her high school drama club very happy. Because I don't know if you know, but she was voted in high school to be most likely to win an Oscar. And her high school is throwing a watch party for the Oscar. So it'll be a very cool moment.
That is awesome. That is awesome. All right. Next category, actor in a supporting role. We have Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling, Barbie, Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things.
Lock of the century of the week of the year is going to be Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured you would say. I didn't really think of anybody else.
De Niro is a better performance than Downey, but Downey is the one that's been cleaning up on the award circuit previous to this, so in no way can I see surprise coming. I think it's going to be Downey, but De Niro gives a better performance.
All right. Three more. And the first of the three is actor in a leading role.
And typically these acting categories are earlier in the show.
I think they've done supporting. I think they've rotated between supporting actor and actress as first, but they're normally like really, really early. So
with action, the previous year's winners presenting.
Right. So we have Bradley Cooper for Maestro.
Except last year when there was a dude who slapped somebody and couldn't be in attendance.
I knew that, and I chose not to say it, and you had to go and do it. But I knew, I was very much aware. I almost said it, but I'm like, no, I'm going to keep this on the track, and there you go, throwing it off the rails. But whatever. Colman Domingo for Rustin. Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction.
I'll go with the upset. I will take Paul Giamatti over Cillian Murphy.
You have really been banging the drum for that.
It's happened twice on this award circuit. He hasn't swept. There have been two separate occasions where Giamatti took home the award over Murphy, to the point where, like, you know, Ponce de Leon, aka, you know, the founder of cinema, aka the pious one, Christopher Nolan, you know, had to go over there and give him a hug and hold his shoulder to him and let him cry. So because he had, you know, lost to Giamatti once out of eight times.
Oh, now I kind of want to see it happen, but you know, that would be kind of mean of me. But anyway, all right. Penultimate category, directing. We have Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest.
Memo to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. You can, in fact, nominate more than one woman every year for Best Director. Personally, this should have been three out of five that should have been nominated as women, but it only ended up being one. It's going to end up being Scorsese losing out to... losing out to Nolan, who's going to get his Oscar posthumously after, you know, the plight of him not getting his recognition for The Dark Knight in 2008. Somebody wake people up and tell them that was 12 years ago.
It has been that long. Yeah, that's the overwhelming favorite. I think everybody sees that coming. All right, so our last category, Best Picture. The nominees are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest.
I loved a lot of these films this year. Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Past Lives being among them. Past Lives was my favorite movie of the year last year. But I think it's going to be Oppenheimer. It just is. It's going to be Oppenheimer, and we're all going to sit there unless we have another envelope swap situation and PricewaterhouseCoopers shuts down. Like, it's going to be Oppenheimer.
I believe you're correct, and that is the overwhelming favorite. But yeah, that is Brian's picks for the Oscars, and we will be keeping track of them on Oscar night to see what see how he turns out.
I mean, it just I think there's I'm not going to do as well this year because I think there is a distinct part of me that does not want there to be a complete Oppenheimer run. And so I'm going against them in some places where they may be honestly the favorite. But I would like to see some other recognition for achievement than in film this year outside of that one particular film.
Okay.
And like Jim said, he brought it up and I hadn't really thought of it. Oppenheimer's released in October with nothing else around it. Does it make as much money?
Oh no, no indeed.
And if it doesn't make as much money, is it as much of a lot?
Those were good
Because
points.
he released Dunkirk in July, but nothing really around it. And Dunkirk got nominations, but he didn't get wins. Interstellar was a November movie. It didn't necessarily get wins. So
and his point about, you know, Dune not releasing this year. If Dune's released, how much does that affect things? I think that's a very good
point. The Zaslav effect.
Yeah. Zaslav.
I'm gonna pull this movie just to be safe.
I mean, I don't. In that instance, you know, I get it. You know, it's still bad because the reason you had to pull it because y'all are some assholes, but I get that. That is not his worst move.
No, the fact that Coyote versus Acme will not be able to be nominated for Best Animated Feature next year because it'll never be seen is, you know, up there.
Yeah, that's. I'm not gonna talk about that anymore.
All right. Well, that'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. Like I said on our announcement podcast earlier this week, update podcast earlier this morning, we will have episodes up. We've got a few in the works. So I know it's been a hot minute, but trust me, stay with us. We're going to have more content coming. And, you know, Chad has to goad me because I have another Ghostbusters movie coming next month.
I certainly do.
All right, that'll about do it for this week's episode. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At the Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and all hail great Mark Sanchez. Bye, Don.
Bye.
Hey guys.
Hey,
good
Joe.
Afternoon, Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Well, you just walked in on our Dr. Doom discussion for the Fantastic Forecasting.
So who are you guys' picks?
I've got Murphy, but I think they're waiting until after the Oscars so that it doesn't hurt his best actor trick chances.
Yeah. it's interesting. I think he would be an interesting choice. I mean, he's very short. So I'm sure it'll just be a voice role and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, honestly, I don't have a pick. I kind of like the idea of it just being a voice and you get somebody else to be in the suit all the time, a la Darth Vader. I don't need to see you. You can just, you know, say stuff.
Yeah, I think he's definitely got like the eyes for it. Like they always make a big deal of Dr. Doom's like, right. Spooky blue eyes, but yeah, you just throw a few close-ups of him in there. He's done it before, acted through the mask. But
yeah, well,
kick it off whenever you want.
All right. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.